Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. A reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 12, beginning with verse 1. 1 and 2 together. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. I'll just read it. Narodayati mam yogo nasantyam dharma evacha na swadhyayas tapastyago nishna purtam nadakshina fratani yagyaschandamsi tirtani niyamaya maha yata varunde satsangah Sarva Sangha Bohohimam. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Narodayati. Narodayati does not control Mam, me, Yogaha, the Ashtanga Yoga system, na, neither, Sankhyam, the analytic study of the material elements, Dharmaha, ordinary piety such as non-violence. Eva, indeed. Cha, also. Na, neither. Swadhyaya, chanting the Vedas. Tapaha, penances. Tyagaha, the renounced order of life. Na, nor ishtapurtam, the performance of sacrifice and public welfare activities, such as digging wells or planting trees. Na, neither. Dakshina, charity. Vratani, taking vows such as fasting completely on Ekadashi. Yajna, worship of the demigods. Chandansi, chanting confidential mantras. Tirthani, going to holy places of pilgrimage. Niyamaha, following major instructions for spiritual discipline. Yamaha, and also minor regulations. Yata, as Avarundhe. This is chapter 12, verse 1. Brings under control Satsangaha, association with my devotees. Sarva, all, Sangha, Material association. Apahaha. Removing. He certainly. Mom. Me. Translation and purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Uddhava, by associating with my pure devotees, one can destroy one's attachment for all objects of material sense gratification. Such purifying association brings me under the control of my devotee. One may perform the Ashtanga Yoga system, engage in philosophical analysis of the elements of material nature, practice nonviolence and other ordinary principles of piety, chant the Vedas, perform penances, take to the renounced order of life, execute sacrificial performances and dig wells, plant trees and perform other public welfare activities, give in charity, carry out severe vows, worship the demigods, chant confidential mantras, visit holy places, or accept major and minor disciplinary injunctions. But even by performing such activities, one does not bring me under his control." Purport. The commentary of Sri Jiva Goswami on these two verses can be summarized as follows. One may serve the devotees of the Lord through ceremonial worship or by actually associating with them. Association with pure devotees is sufficient for self-realization because one can learn everything about spiritual advancement from such devotees. With perfect knowledge, one can achieve all that one desires. For the process of devotional service immediately brings the blessings of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Pure devotional service is transcendental to the modes of nature, and therefore it appears mysterious to the souls conditioned by those modes. There's a long list in this translation, in this verse, of auspicious activities, purifying, elevating activities. Most of these are described, prescribed in the Vedas or in the supplementary literatures, the literatures that are supplementary to the Vedas. This list is so complete, practically everyone who's engaged in some form of spiritual life is performing one of these or more of the activities on this list. It covers practically everybody. The karmis who are performing ritualistic sacrifice for selfish purposes. They want to go to heaven, or they want to attain Swarga Loka, or they want to enjoy on this earth. They perform sacrifices to fulfill their desires. That's one category of person. Others, they're not interested in these rituals, but they want to unite with the Supreme Consciousness. They perform yoga, meditation. They may perform the physical exercises of the Ashtanga system taught by Patanjali Rishi to prepare themselves for this meditation. And then others, they want to develop transcendental knowledge, as it is explained in the Upanishads, for understanding themselves as pure spirit, and maybe also to understand the Paramatma, the Supreme Spirit. And others. There are others who are simply pious workers, want to do some charity, want to do some welfare work. Not everybody is interested in the supreme. Many people are satisfied with doing some good for other people, politically or through some charity or altruistic service. Anyway, practically everybody who's doing something good is described in this verse. But then the conclusion is that none of these other pious activities can capture the personality of Godhead. In other words, he's not influenced. He's not impressed by these other things. Actually, no one can control God. But God voluntarily, he agrees to come under the control of his devotees. That is love. Krishna's mother, Mother Yashoda, is the only person in existence who could tie up the Supreme Lord with ropes. The great yogis are trying to capture Krishna in the heart, but he's very elusive. They cannot catch him. Maybe they can get a glimpse, a darshan, once or twice. A few are able to see him, very few. But Krishna comes and goes as he wishes. He can take away that darshan, just like Narada. As a young boy, he meditated in the forest by the instructions he received from the great sages. And he was able, on the strength of his meditation, to see Lord Narayana in his heart momentarily. But then the Lord disappeared in his heart. He couldn't see him anymore. And he became very anxious. Didrikshus tadaham bhuya pranidaya manoridhi. Even though I wanted to see again that Lord in my heart, he says. And I tried to again come into that meditative trance, and he could not. And therefore he was feeling great anxiety. Avitripta ivaturaha. Dissatisfied, unsatiated. I could not again see the Lord. And then Narada heard the Lord speak to him as a voice in the sky, Akashvani, unembodied voice. Hantasmin janmani bhavan ma drashtami harhati avipakva kashayanam durdarshoham kuyoginam. I am sorry, my dear boy, but you will not be able to see me again in this life. The yogis who are not perfect in their practice can never see me. So I just give you a little glimpse. You'll have to wait till your next life to see me. In fact, the real idea is if you want to see me, you have to perform pure devotional service. You must purify your heart of all material motivations. So Krishna is saying to Uddhava, his most dear friend and advisor, in these two verses that we read today, that I cannot be captured by any other means, even the most auspicious activities, only by this pure devotional service can my devotees control me, can they capture me. In the Brahma Samhita, this is also said. Pantastu koti shatavatsara sambhragam yo vayodatapi manaso munipungavanam sopyasti yat papadasimnya vichintya tatve govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami. Okay. How does it begin? What was that verse again? Anyway, the yogis and the gyanis are each in their own way trying to reach, to make contact with the personality of Godhead. Their difficulty is they don't understand him as a person. They have a basically impersonal conception of the Supreme. So they can realize the impersonal aspect. A person is a person. He's not never a person. That's just simple logic. If I'm a person, I'm always a person. I never become a thing. I'm a person. Person always has consciousness, is always alive. My body may die, but I will take birth again in another body. I cannot cease to live, to exist as a living being. Even if the body is destroyed, I am sent to another body. That is the law of nature. And I cannot lose my consciousness. Even at night, I am sleeping. Even when I am not dreaming and I am in sushrupti, deep sleep, still the consciousness is there. I wake up in the morning and I say, oh, I slept so well, I don't remember anything. So there was no experience during the deep sleep, but you were there, you were conscious. The consciousness is never removed from the living being. He's always spirit soul. He's always a person. And God, certainly, if we are always persons, certainly the Supreme Person is always a person. But a person also has his impersonal aspect. I am alive. This material body that I am living in is alive and functioning because of my vitality, because of the soul. Take away the soul and the body is dead and very immediately begins to disintegrate. But my body has an aspect that's impersonal or not alive. Just like the nails on my fingers and the hair on my head is not really alive. It's dead matter growing out of my living body. So a living person, a person can have an impersonal part to him. God is a person, always a person. But his body is so beautiful and so potent that there is always a great effulgence. Just like even in Christianity, when they paint God, Jesus, or Mother Mary, or even a saint, the saint always has a halo, a light coming from his head. That is the effulgence. Also, in the Hindu iconography, when Krishna is painted, or any avatar, or even great devotee is painted, also a halo is there, at least especially for Vishnu, for God. Effulgence, light, emanating from the personal body. So the body is personal, but that divine light that's coming from the body is impersonal. It's the impersonal aspect of the person. So the yogis and the gyanis, those who want to find the absolute truth, either by meditation or by studying the Vedas, especially the Upanishads, Vedanta, both of them are trying to find the Supreme, but they don't understand that he's a person. They're looking for the Supreme in some impersonal form. And therefore, they can hardly approach him. They can have some impersonal realization, but the person is always just beyond their grasp. The yogis are practicing pranayama. They're controlling their breath. So it is said, vayur atapi, that they're chasing after the Supreme Person at the speed of the wind, of air. And the gyanis are chasing even faster. They're using their mind to try to understand the Supreme Person. So they're chasing after him at the speed of the mind, even faster than the speed of wind. Speed of the mind is faster than the speed of light. The physicists, the physical scientists think that nothing can be faster than the speed of light. But the mind is faster. They say that it takes many light years, many years for light to reach from one part of the end of the universe to the other. But any person in his sleep can dream that he's on the other side of the universe. And in his linga sharira, his subtle body, when he's dreaming like that, he's actually traveling. Speed of the mind, faster than the speed of light. But even at that speed, the Gyanis can never quite reach Krishna. He's always one step beyond them. Because they're looking for his impersonal, they're looking at his glowing effulgence, and therefore they're blinded. They cannot see the person behind the effulgence. So piyasti yat prapadasimni avachintya tatve. He remains avachintya. They cannot understand him. He's inconceivable to the Gyanis and the Yogis. They can almost touch his toes. That effulgence is especially brilliant around the toenails of the Lord. They're like shining mirrors, reddish colored. So the effulgence is emanating from his toes, especially. And they're almost touching his feet, but not quite. They cannot quite understand God as a person. They never can. Without pure devotion, just by yoga, by karma, by jnana, nobody can realize that the Supreme in his full personality. Jai Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Shri Gaur Nitai. Hiranmayena Patrena Lokasya Pihitam Mukam Tatvam Pushan Apavinu Satyalokaya Drishtoye. This is the prayer of the Rishi who has seen in his meditation the mantras of the Isha Upanishad. And he's praying to the Supreme Person. Sir, please remove this blinding light. You're covered by this golden, brilliant effulgence, and I cannot see your face. Mukam, apa, tatvam pushan, all Supreme Person, you are a person. Please remove this brilliant light so I can see your face. The advanced, mature yogi, Gyani, is praying to the Lord, let me please understand you as a person. That is the beginning of pure devotion. Bahunam janmanam ante gyanavan mam prapadyate. After many, many lifetimes of trying to develop as a Gyani, as a yogi, or even as a karmi, the wise man realizes finally that Vasudeva, the Supreme Person, is everything. The Supreme is a person. He's Vasudeva. Vasudeva is the son of Vasudeva. The son of Vasudeva and Devaki. Krishna. Such a great soul is very rare, and it may take him many lifetimes to reach that devotional realization. Otherwise, if we remain in materialistic consciousness, no matter how we are successful as karmis, jnanis, or yogis, we will never quite reach Krishna. Just like the barbarian demoniac king Kalayavana, friend of Jarasandha, tried to defeat Krishna in battle. Krishna refused. I'm not going to fight with a mlecha. Krishna ran away from the battle. Walked away. Not ran away. He simply walked away. I'm not going to fight with you. You're a barbarian.
And he walked away. And this Kalayavana was furious. You're refusing to fight with me. He chased after Krishna. But Krishna, even though he was walking on his bare feet, not on a chariot, and he was walking peacefully, not running, walking at a leisurely pace, and Kalayavana couldn't catch him, run as fast as he tried. He ran and ran and ran for many, many yojanas, and could not exactly, almost, but not quite, reach Krishna. He could not reach him. And finally he was lured into the cave of Muchukunda and met his death. He woke up Muchukunda thinking it was Krishna sleeping there, and Muchukunda angrily burned him to ashes with his glance. He had that benediction from the devatas of Swargaloka. So, like Muchukunda, those whose consciousness is not purified by becoming pure devotees of the Lord, they cannot capture him, they cannot realize him as a person. This is Krishna's mysterious power, his yogamaya. Naham prakashak sarvasya yogamaya samavritaha. Krishna says in the Gita, I don't reveal myself to everybody. I'm covered over by my yogamaya, illusory energy. And so, those who are not devoted to me cannot understand me, and they certainly cannot control me. Okay, understanding this, what are we to do? Not just approach Krishna directly. That's not the proper etiquette. We should, if we want to realize Krishna, if we want to enter his service, we should approach him through his devotees. What Krishna says in this verse is that the association of Vaishnavas is what captures me. When you associate with my devotees, then I will accept you also as my devotee. I'm not impressed with somebody who makes a show of being my devotee. Be a devotee of my devotee, that will impress me. So that is what Krishna is telling his friend Uddhava in this verse. In the next couple of days, we'll read some more. We'll read the rest of this chapter, or at least I plan to read up to verse 15 this week and next week in the evening. And Krishna will develop his explanation further of the special value of associating with devotees and the special power that the pure devotees have of even bringing God under control. Okay, so I'll stop there. If anybody has any questions or comments, we can discuss. Anything? Hare Krishna. No? Okay, no questions. Yes, Prabhu.
Does that mean that all these practices have no value at all? Or?
Not that they have no value. These are all auspicious practices, and many of them on the list are described and authorized directly in the Vedas or in the Puranas, Dharma Shastras, the literatures that are authorized by the Vedas. So they are purifying. If someone is in a contaminated condition, then this will help him become pure enough to begin real spiritual life. But it is, we're warned by the Vaishnavacharyas, don't expect success to get the fruit even of these material practices or these secondary practices if you don't add at least a tinge, some small measure of devotional service also. You want to be a successful jnani or a successful karmi. You want to actually attain Swargaloka or attain liberation, mukti. Then you have to add a little bit of devotional service to the Supreme Lord into the mix. Otherwise you will not get the success of any of these auspicious progressive processes. You have to have a little bit of mixture of devotion to to become a successful jnani or yogi or even a karmi. So that's how Krishna arranges or entices the living entities to begin his devotional service. Because if they understand that they have to have some devotion to God to become successful, then they will do it. Just like materialistic people, very often they make a show of being religious because it's good business. People think that they're very reputable, outstanding citizen if they go to church or perform some puja. So they spend money, they go to church on Sunday, they make donations. But that, even though their motive is material, at least that's the beginning of their devotional life. There's some little trace of devotion there. Person's very materialistic, but he also has some sentiment for serving God. That's the beginning of his spiritual life. So that is, you can call that bhakti mishra karma. He's mostly a materialist, but he's got a little devotion for God. But the more that devotion increases, the proportions change. You start off with 0.1% bhakti and 99.9% materialism. But the bhakti becomes more and more prominent. Eventually it reaches the point that a man is 51% devotional and 49% materialistic. That becomes, instead of bhakti mishra jnana, jnana with a little bit of bhakti, it becomes karma mishra, not jnana, bhakti mishra karma. After you reach 50% of bhakti and beyond, then it's karma mishra bhakti. It's primarily bhakti. Majority, more than 50% bhakti, and the remainder karma. So that is bhakti mixed with karma, and as you decrease the percentage of karma, it gradually approaches pure devotion. There are stages that people go through. So these purificatory processes help the people, help all sorts of people, introduce a little bit of bhakti into their lives and gradually increase the percentage of it. If you serve the demigods, they're the representatives of God. So God is pleased, but not very much. If you do pious works for the benefit of other people, that also pleases God somewhat. Not as much as pure devotion, but it helps. It helps one become qualified for something better. Okay? Thank you. Yes, Guru?
This kind of sadhu, who are helping others, I don't name the hospitals.
Yes?
And we claim that I'm the incarnation of Lord Krishna. Is it right?
Probably not. We have to test him. He claims to be avatar of Lord Krishna. He wants to perform Rasa Leela with his disciples' wives. Can he lift Govardhan Hill for 7 weeks on one finger? If he can do that, then maybe we'll consider him a serious candidate for avatar. He wants to perform Rasa Leela. Can he lift the Govardhan Hill on one finger? Then we can think maybe he's avatar. Maybe. And if he is, then he's a criminal in the eyes of God. And in the eyes of pure devotees, he's a fraud. You claim you're God, you better be God, or else you're in trouble. Just like if I march around and say, I'm a police officer. You're under arrest. Well, if you're not authorized to carry a gun and arrest people, then you're a criminal, and you'll end up in jail. So you march around claiming you're avatar of God, and you're not, then you're deceiving and you're a hypocrite. No? Yes? Yes. That's not sadhu. Sadhu means a pure, saintly person, not a hypocrite. In Kali Yuga, we have so many hypocrite so-called sadhus, but that's not a real sadhu. We don't want to be disrespectful to anybody unnecessarily. You don't always know who's a real sadhu, who isn't. So if someone comes to you, I'm a sadhu, treat him with respect, because you don't know, maybe he is a real sadhu.
But usually if someone's, you know, just advertising, I'm a sadhu, give me 10 rupees, it doesn't sound like a real sadhu. You know, just call yourself a sadhu so you can get a few rupees. Yes? I don't know if you're talking about anybody in particular. I don't know. Okay, well, we don't want to get into personal, you know, attacks. We just, you know, you can understand the general principle and see if it applies to anybody in particular. Yeah. If you're avatar, then we should offer you all respect. If you're not, then why are you saying you are? Okay. Avatar means you are God himself. Come down to earth. God is God. Living entity is very small. God is infinite. You know, there's a difference. So the little tiny spark should not call himself the total, everything. God is everything. God is absolute and infinite. If you're absolute and infinite, then you're God. If you're not, then don't say you're God. If you created the universe and you're maintaining it all by yourself and you have the power to destroy the whole universe, then you can claim you're God. Otherwise, don't do that. Okay? Anything else? Yes, Mother? Well, it's a little hard to hear with the fans. If okay, how can grihasthas perform pure devotional service? And what's the reason why it's difficult for them? Why can't they? Because... Okay, they have so many duties, and yeah, they have to associate with materialists, and then sometimes they have to do things that are not very saintly, just to do business, they have to do things. Okay, if we have to associate with non-devotees, it makes it difficult for us. If we have to do unglorious things, sometimes even not very pious things, just to survive, to make a living, this does make it difficult. But there's no reason why a grihastha cannot be a pure devotee just because what he's doing is difficult. Bhavagrahi Janardhanaha, the Supreme Lord, first of all, he judges us according to our attitude. He doesn't judge just the externals, how much money you can give him, how much, you know, even how much austerity you can perform or how much sacrifice you can make. He sees each individual, what he can do. And he judges according to the attitude and the attempt. So if a grihastha is struggling very hard to be a pure devotee, Krishna gives him credit for what he's trying to do, even if there's some apparent obstacles. You know, so just like the example of when the monkey army was building the bridge to Lanka. What was it, a squirrel? Came to, you know, some say spider, some say squirrel. Different shastras. Was trying to make his contribution out of love, bringing little grains of sand to throw in the water. And the Hanuman and others were laughing at him. You know, we're bringing these big rocks and pieces of mountains. And what is the use of your little grains of sand? But Lord Ramachandra chastised them. He said, his devotion is as good as yours. And I very much appreciate his little grains of sand. And some who say it was squirrel or chipmunk, Ramachandra petted, you know, put his hand on the little animal. And we see the squirrels have line on their back from the hand of Lord Ramachandra. So we may be little people, not able to do much, but if our attitude is pure and dedicated, Krishna will appreciate it and give us all his blessings. And someone else who's in a renounced order may be proud, maybe even a hypocrite. I'm not saying that grasses are better than sannyasis, but Krishna judges everybody as individual, doing whatever he can. He's giving 100% of what he can give, then Krishna fully appreciates it. Okay? Anybody can be a pure devotee. There's no physical, there's no material obstacle to being Krishna's pure devotee. The obstacle is just in our own heart. Yes, time? Okay. So we can stop here. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.